The Athletic.
Totally Football Show. Today, big Premier League weekend. Meeting of rival outfits at Elland Road, Team Ronaldo and Team Maguire. Leeds also present. Spurs, busy living in Pep's head. And Lampard and Gerrard. Will it be one goes and one stays for the top flight too? Plus, Tom and Dom get it on in the Intertotally Cup. It's coming up in the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Monday, 21st of February. Listen, thank you so much for joining us today. Standing by to talk about football and more. We have Daniel Storey. Hi, Daniel.
Good morning, James.
Also, Matt Davis-Adams. Hello, Matt.
Hi, James.
Also, Nuruddin Chowdhury. Hi, Nuruddin.
Hiya.
Hello. Welcome back. I don't think we've ever had you on when Man United have won before.
No. It's a novel feeling.
That's going to be exciting. We'll get to Man United a little bit later on. I mean, did everyone make it through the storm okay?
Still going on in rural Nottinghamshire, as Matt will attest to.
Mm. Yeah, pretty nasty round here. I was supposed to be doing an under-23s game on Friday night, which bit the dust the same way that Forest match did at Bournemouth, which I'm sure Daniel has similarly strong feelings to me about.
Surely you're too old for that.
Well, you can play overage players, Noz, so I tend to get in as one of those and just kind of conduct things quarterback style.
Nice. Jay writes in and says, 17th January 2022, with 22 games played and 11 points between Man City and Liverpool, AC Jimbo declared the title race is over and all that to be decided was who would finish second behind Man City. Well, yes, Jay, I did. And do you know what? I kind of feel like I might stand by my assertion back then. I know that it's now back in Liverpool's hands, of course. But I feel like this might be one. Well, it doesn't matter what I think. What do you guys think? Have we now got a title race back on?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like I missed a couple of episodes of the box set that is Barclays, because I'm sure last weekend, which was the most low wattage round of fixtures you could ever possibly get, it was all over. And, you know, City had won 14 of 15 and were strolling to the title. And yeah, all of a sudden, Liverpool's paltry 5 wins in a row seems to have reignited anything. But yeah, it's definitely back on. But I was as shocked as everybody else when they did the table at the end of the City-Spurs game to find out that it in fact is.
Yeah. Although 6 points still. 6 points. What do you think, Noz and Dan?
I find it so confusing, the table at the moment. Do you know when people say like you shouldn't have a table until after three games because like it's all everywhere? I kind of feel like that. Like I can't keep a track because of the amount of games that each team has played. So there was me thinking that maybe Liverpool like 9 points behind or 12 points behind, but like the game in hand makes a massive difference, obviously, and obviously the fact that they've got to play City. So I definitely think it's back on, and you've got to give Liverpool credit because like it's that thing of they are so good. You forget how good they are because of City. Because City are always winning, but then it's a mark of a great team that as soon as the leader slips, they're right there. And there's so much to be said for being that chasing team and building momentum and the other team looking behind the shoulder. So no, it's definitely on.
All right, magnanimous stuff there, Noz, given your footballing proclivities. Dan,
I mean, yes, it's definitely on because
it's not. But anyway.
These kind of defeats to City do come out of nowhere, but they do seem to happen. There does seem to be a formula for getting at them. And if there is a team that can replicate what Tottenham did, which we'll talk about in a bit, then it's probably Liverpool in that fixture at the Etihad.
Oof. When's that happening? Start of April?
Yeah, April the 9th, I think.
Right. Meantime, of course, that game in hand that Liverpool have, Noz, you'll be delighted to know, will be played this week. When are they playing that? That's on Wednesday. Yeah, they host Leeds. Leeds, who have conceded 10 goals in their last three games. Liverpool, who are the division's biggest scorers. But you never know what might happen. As for Jay and his post, Jay, you're absolutely right. I did perhaps jump the gun a little bit there. If you want to send in what you think I should do as a kind of like penance, should Liverpool win the league, we can talk about that. Something visual, I'm thinking, given this is a a podcast. Anyway, quick run through the scores. Saturday, West Ham drew 1-1 with Newcastle. Arsenal won 2-1 against Brentford, and Liverpool beat Norwich 3-1. And OK, then strange stuff happened. Watford winning 1-0 at Villa. Burnley winning at Brighton 3-0. Saints beating Everton 2-0 wasn't a huge surprise, nor Chelsea's dysfunctional 1-0 win at Palace in what Matt Davis-Adams describes as the worst game he's seen all season. But then how about that tea time clash, Man City 2, Spurs 3. Sunday, a mighty win for Man United at Elland Road, 4-2, and Wolves beating Leicester 2-1, and that was your Premier League weekend. We have midweek action, along with Liverpool Leeds, as Burnley Spurs, Watford Crystal Palace, and on Thursday, Arsenal Wolves, plus in the European Cup stuff, Chelsea facing Lille and Man United going to Atletico in the Champions League, and Europa League action involving Leicester as well. But, of course, we're going to begin with Saturday Tea Time's Man City Spurs clash.
Kulusevski there, looking for again on the right-hand side from which he provided that disallowed effort. And the crossing, Kane! Oh! Can you truly believe this? Sometimes football really is stranger than fiction! Football, bloody hell!
Crikey, the sweet sound of Spurs with their remarkable time added on winner at the Etihad over Man City. Spurs very much living rent-free in Pep Guardiola's head these days. And possibly we owe, as Spurs fans, an apology after suggesting on Thursday's pod that this could get ugly. Spurs, at the time, you remember, had just been done, dejected, after a 2-0 defeat to Wolves. City were on that incredible unbeaten run. But here come Tottenham doing Tottenham things against Man City. When's the last time that anybody did the double over a Pep team anywhere?
I feel like Wolves did it not that long ago.
Oh.
Traore fueled. And I think Solskjaer's Man United might have done it as well.
Ah.
Yes.
Right, okay. Well, Spurs have now won 4 of their last 6 meetings with Pep's side, including the earlier one this season. Daniel, you touched on this a bit before, but how did they do it on Saturday?
Well, I kind of feel, in hindsight, this was kind of the perfect Antonio Conte week, in that he comes out in midweek and makes intimations that he's been slightly let down by the club, and then uses his pre-match press conference to kind of feign outrage that anyone could have anticipated those comments in such a way, when it seemed quite a simple explanation for them. And then he follows that up with a team that plays back to the wall, that fights. We talked about last Monday about his touchline demeanour, really kind of browbeaten, and this was the opposite. That celebration for the third goal was brilliant, Conte. And there is a formula to beat City, which is that you have to get a bit lucky, you have to soak up pressure, you have to defend really well, and Eric Dier and Romero being back was massive. And you have to counter-attack them, but you can't just counter-attack them. You know, it's not as simple as that, because City are very good at shutting those down. You have to counter-attack them absolutely perfectly. And that first goal is, I think, pretty much unstoppable. It's a pretty much the perfect counter-attack. The pass, the run, the composure for Son to kind of turn a really good chance into an open goal for someone else, and the support run from Kulusevski to keep up with play and finish the chance. And I think that probably spooked City a bit. The surprising thing to me was that it's rare to beat Manchester City, but Tottenham effectively did it 3 times in the space of 90 minutes, which is amazing to have the resilience after what has happened over the last week at 2-2 to think, no, we can still go and win this. We're not happy with the point. Was a joy to watch as a relative neutral.
Yeah, they were clinical as well, weren't they? You know, it felt like City had a lot of possession, obviously, and plenty of shots, albeit not many of them on target. Spurs had 6 attempts at goal, 5 on target, scored 3 times, and had the 3 best players on the pitch in Son and Kulusevski and Kane. My goodness me. I mean, it seems a bit simplistic to say, was that performance fueled by the fact that it was against Manchester City? But it was so far and above what we've seen from him generally this season that it's kind of the only logical conclusion that you can draw, I think.
It was an amazing performance. It was as if he was playing both quarterback and receiver, basically kicking off the counter-attack, then bombing upfield and getting on the end of whatever resulted. As good as individual performance as you'll see in the Premier League this season, said Jamie Carragher, amongst other noises at the end of that game. Would you agree with that? It's a big shout.
it's sad though, isn't it, in that I don't want Harry Kane's career to be remembered for outstanding performances in individual games. You kind of, well, it underlined the fact that you desperately want him to win something. Obviously, you know, it would have been different if England had won the Euros, but if this is how his career is going to be remembered, as one of the all-time Premier League greats who could not win games on his own but have massive influences against the very, very best teams, it seems a shame that he's going to end his career without anything to show for it particularly.
Is he? Well,
what's he got? A couple of years left on his contract? So what, he could try and run it down and leave when he's 31? What's his window of clubs going to be like then? He's maybe got, what do you think, two more seasons at this kind of level that he's at? So where's he actually hoping to go if he's allowed to go? Is he hoping?
I mean,
that...
Serie A, you've got until like your early 40s to win a title.
Well, yeah, fine, yeah, but he can do that in 10 years' time, can't he?
Yeah.
What are his other options immediately in the next couple of years if Man City don't actually want him? Is he hoping that Mbappe to Real Madrid falls through and he could maybe go there? I don't know. I just see quite a limited window of clubs for him to go to.
All right. I mean, he could be the man to break the striker's curse at Stamford Bridge. I don't know. You know, football is that crazy. It's impossible.
There's been lots of conversations about that, James. There are plenty of Chelsea supporters who would have absolutely loved Chelsea to go for Harry Kane in the summer rather than Romelu Lukaku, but it's just never, ever going to happen, is it?
All right, then. We should talk about some of the players coming in to weaken Antonio Conte's side, one of whom got his first start of the season away at the Etihad, of all places. He scored the opening goal. Beyond that, did his inclusion help this turnaround for Spurs?
I think it helps in that it freshens Tottenham up. There's always it's always going to be incredibly hard to come into that either front line or attacking unit at Tottenham because when Kane and Son are playing, because so much goes through them that you effectively become a kind of latent threat rather than a potent one, which is exactly what he was for that first goal. You know, I watched that counter develop, I saw Son. It wasn't until Son had even passed the ball that I even noticed that it was really someone else in that Spurs attack that might want the ball. And hang on a minute, it isn't Harry Kane, it's someone else. So I think that's a really powerful thing, and it's actually maybe helpful for a player to come in when there isn't a huge amount of pressure, because Kane and Son are expected to do everything. And if he can play that role as a kind of, you know, a very complementary third wheel, there's a huge benefit to that. There really is, because I don't think there'll be pressure on him to be a creator. I don't think there'll be a pressure on him to necessarily take men on and beat them. He can kind of just sort of hang around in the areas and expect those two to produce brilliant things, which is absolutely what they did.
He reminds me a little bit of Mandzukic when he was playing on the wing for Juventus, just because like he doesn't look like a winger. He's a big lad, he looks like he should be a centre forward, and that I think that creates its own problems just because he's physically very hard to stop. The thing I like about him is that everything he does feels certain. Sometimes you get these wingers that are a bit sort of iffy and sort of don't really know what they're doing, and it feels like a bit of an accident. He's certain in every movement, so no, I think he fits right in.
Name me one of those wingers who are a bit iffy, Oz.
In hindsight, he was a great player and he'd fit right into Manchester United's team now. And probably be one of the best players. But Nani was a player who was hit and miss, who sometimes look incredible, sometimes look incredibly jittery. And I suppose he's the sort of polar opposite to someone like this lad who sort of like is so powerful and again like so certain in every move.
And only 21 as well. Well, so much to commend about this Spurs performance. That extraordinary save from Lloris on, I'm not sure, I think it was Gundogan, wasn't it? The flying fingertip effort. Also the fact that, as you say, Spurs relentlessly rolled up their sleeves and went again, even when City equalised with that handball late on, they used the 7 minutes added on to go and get the winner. Crikey. City have only won one of the six Premier League games in which they've conceded first this season. Should Pep worry?
I don't think so, in that they don't fall behind very often. When they do, it can cause this kind of jittery psychological response. But to be honest, they did equalise twice. They came back twice in the game, so I don't think that was the issue. The issue is that they defended appallingly and they didn't seem to learn. It was as if the Tottenham's first goal didn't tell them anything. and they continue to make those same mistakes. They continue to push probably too many players forward, and they continue to waste the chances they got. As Matt said, that Lloris made one really good save, but for the possession and the territory City had, they should have created far more. This was a kind of old City frustrations. But we know that they can then go and march on and win 8 of the next 9 again, or 9 of the next 9. So I don't think it's, you know, it's no issue, but they have, it puts a huge amount of pressure potentially on that Liverpool game, which that's the big mistake of Saturday, because they could have gone into that game knowing it was a bit of a free hit, and now it certainly isn't.
One thing I often think when they go behind is that Pep could, this is such a basic point, but hey, that's my stock in trade. Pep could always just take 10, you know, just take a deep breath, count to 10, because I think what he does is he frantically grabs his players over, jabs them manically in the chest, starts shouting at them wide-eyed. And I think, how much of this could you possibly take on board when somebody's just shouting in your face like this? You're just thinking, this guy's a maniac, rather than, oh yeah, I need to tuck in 5 yards on the right-hand side and that'll stop the cross coming in or whatever. Probably nothing, but it scares me. So I don't know, if I was 2 yards away from him getting covered in flecks of his spittle as he screamed at me, I'm not sure I'd be completely taking the message on board.
I think this defeat was good for Pep emotionally. Just because, like, he seems the kind of guy that sort of, like, he can't handle sort of just being imperious and winning all the time. And, like, there's almost like a pent-up thing all the time that he's on edge. So, like, it'll be this thing of, like, they'll beat somebody 5-0 and then he'll sort of go into his, like, more than you can believe, and sort of, like, get into this big thing of, like, how great the opposition is, and every time somebody praises him or an interviewer praises him, it's all a case of, like, no, they were great and we weren't great. So, like, he almost needs this. And, like,
the antagonist.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where, like, you get some people who are really neurotic and sort of on edge, but then as soon as, like, something bad happens, they're totally zen. And that was almost the case after this game. He just seemed to calm down. I also think it's funny that there's been a lot of talk. When City were supposedly running away with the league, there was a lot of talk about our City boring, our City soulless, because they're so efficient and they just run away with it. And does anyone really care enough? And it's almost like this is his, like, Russell Crowe moment of, like, are you not entertained? Like, are you happy now? We've lost. Like, we're fallible. Sort of like, have we now got a soul? So, no, it's good in a way.
Yeah. You cover a lot of ground there, culturally speaking. Anyway, so Spurs have given Pep a new world to conquer, perhaps. They themselves lie 7 points off fourth place with 3 games in hand, disturbingly. What that means, we will find out when those games are played. As for the title race, yes, Liverpool are 6 points back with that 3-1 win over Norwich. Norwich, who took the lead 3 minutes into the second half, and then Liverpool opened up with goals from Mane, Salah and Luis Diaz, January signing of Luis Diaz. All three of the goals had something pretty special about them. Mane's whirling cartwheel, that was extraordinary, that first one. Have you seen a goal like that before?
Yeah. I mean, it was as if it was a kind of sleepy first half, and it was as if Norwich's goal sort of offended Liverpool's front three, and they were like, oh, okay, fine, we'll do what we can do and we'll win the game. And there's this, I mean, Liverpool are brilliant at these kind of bundles of chances in a row. So they'll score and they'll create a chance and then they'll create another chance within 45 seconds. And there's this sense that everything is kind of weighted towards the opposition's goal. And it was as if they'd just been, okay, fine, we now need to score 3, because what we do is score 3 goals. And yes, each of us will score, because that's kind of what we do. And as you say, there was a moment of individual magic to all three of them, and yet they're all kind of team goals as well.
Alisson with the assist for Mo Salah's second. Alisson now has as many Premier League assists as Mane this season, intriguingly. And the third goal by Luis Diaz followed a 34-pass move, which is the most passes we've had in the build-up to a goal in the Premier League this season. Most that Liverpool have had in any game since Opta bothered collecting this data. So there you go. Liverpool have now won 8 games in a row. And Norwich are now bottom of the table again. It wasn't that long ago that they got out the bottom three. And that, but they're bottom once more. 5 points from safety. No games in hand. All right. Wednesday sees Liverpool hosting Leeds. And, of course, on Thursday we'll react to what happens there. Next up, though, on the Totally Football Show, we will be talking about Leeds' most recent performance against Man United.
So, Mr. Ranić, what's troubling you? Well, we've got a leak in the dressing room, Doctor.
Right, and you want to find out who it is?
No, I just can't find a good plumber.
Sometimes there's only so much you can do, but with Paddy Power, our offers are watertight. So this weekend, get money back as a free bet if one leg of your 4+4 bet builder lets you down. Paddy Power!
Pre-match online bet builder bets only. Min odds 1 to 5 per leg. Max free bet £10 per day. 7-day free bet expiry. Excludes enhanced match odds. Eligibility restrictions and T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Totally Football Show Live is coming to Manchester. We're going to be in... What can I call Manchester, Noz? What's it called?
Does it have a nickname? The Heart of the North.
The Heart of the North, is that right? What would you call it?
If you I'd call it the cradle of the Industrial Revolution.
There you go. That's where we'll be. Working up ahead of steam on the 19th of April. That's looming, much as the mill workers did during the Industrial Revolution. So make sure you get to thelowry.com to get your tickets for the Totally. Who's on the lineup? I think it's Duncan Alexander, Michael Cox, and A.N. Other. Do we know producer Charlie? We do know. We don't know. So mystery guest. Listener.
Jet from Gladiators.
Wow. Yeah. Anyway, that's a special treat. Turn up, see who it is. Brilliant. Now, also, Man United won 4-2 at Leeds. Crikey, what a victory this was, Noz. I imagine you were following it agog as, you know, the tackles flew in and the coins flew in and the deluge came down and all that stuff.
Yeah, it was incredible. It's, I mean, a lot of people have sort of mentioned it, but it was a real sort of like a callback to like the 80s football. The only slight sort of issue I had was I felt for all that rain, it could have been muddier. Like I would have loved the place to be absolutely caked in mud. And I don't know if that's to do with like the surfaces these days, but that was a little bit disappointing. But it's one of those games that where tactics kind of go out the window just because it's such a weird situation. And like, for instance, at the beginning of the game when the surface was more sort of, it was making the ball go faster rather than making it stick, it felt as if Dan James would give Luke Shaw a lot of trouble. And they obviously had a tactic of sort of getting it over the top and letting Dan James run onto it. But then obviously you can't do that. You can't do that because the ball just sticks and stops. So that sort of evens the sort of playing field. But no, it was great. I loved the atmosphere. I loved the sort of... I loved how angry it was in the stadium, and this whole thing of like it was I found it interesting that some people were sort of surprised or forgot the sort of animosity between Leeds and Manchester United, and it's so big. It's
why is it so big, Noz?
Well it's obviously sort of civic, so it's historical, but There's different rivalries. There's a rivalry with City, which is very sort of like familial and sort of like. You're in the same city, so it's almost like there's loads of familiarity, good and bad. There's Liverpool, where there's a lot of hatred, a lot of anger, but like it's also sort of tinged with respect, and you kind of see them as like a worthy sort of enemy. But Leeds is more than the other two. Leeds is hate. It's real hate, and again, like sometimes that can spill over into real hate, but it's great for football hate as well. Like that thing of like cheering when somebody was fouled, like that's what you want. And it's sort of like, I sometimes feel as if whether it's television channels or sort of the press or whoever, we like to sort of fetishize this animosity, but then almost clutch our pearls when it actually happens or when there's like a game with a lot of grief and a bit of blood or whatever. But like that's what you want. Like that's the...
You want
it was
gladiators.
Almost like... Yeah, exactly. It was like
what you're all about, Noz.
Yeah, it was like Jet in a prime. No, but you want those games that sort of remind you that sort of like as sanitized as the game has become.
Mm.
Games like Leeds versus Man United will always have this sort of pleasant unpleasantness.
Mm. You can judge a game by if their under 18s were playing each other. Would supporters really, really care about the result? And Leeds Man United is one of those that if Man United went away to Leeds and their under-18s won 4-0, it would be a big deal. And the same with Sunderland Newcastle and the same with Forest Derby and, you know, the same probably with West Ham Chelsea. But it's those games, they're the ones that have got real needle where it goes above and beyond 90 minutes in terms of this. You know, we use the phrase bragging rights all the time, but it really will feel like that this morning for Manchester United fans.
Mm. That's it, and going back to the game, like obviously it was up and down, and like there were United going ahead, and there's comeback and all that business. But there was a stage in the game where Leeds made it 2-2, and normally Manchester United would sort of crumble because they've got an issue with leadership. They've got an issue with sort of the game sort of running away with it, and they can't control it any longer. But I almost feel that because of the atmosphere, because of the sort of anger in the stadium and because it meant so much, that almost gave them an extra sort of impetus to sort of like fight back. And that met, if it was against Brighton or if it was against, Newcastle or someone, like perhaps they wouldn't have come back, but it, because it obviously meant so much. And stuff like McTominay, like he was charging about like a over-sugared toddler, sort of like a big sort of lummox, but like that is exactly what you want. That was amazing. And even like Maguire, he didn't do the thing of sort of putting, thankfully, you know, he didn't put his fingers in his ears or sort of cup his ears when he did that slide. But it's the way, like every goal he was sort of like going to fans and sort of roaring because he knows what it means. And like this is the kind of game that you can be on poor form, all the fans can be against you. You have one good game against the likes of Leeds, and then you're back on side.
Yeah, like a derby. All right, well, I mean, there's a lot to kind of pick out from that. First of all, Harry Maguire's knee slide, one of the finest examples of the genre possibly ever. The way that he just gently glides round to show his name, to show his back to the fans at the end. I've never done a knee slide. I imagine the pitch on Sunday probably facilitated it a bit. But you do see players getting it very, very wrong. Do they train for that, or how do they?
I think that's just good judgment, James.
Is it?
To be honest, all right. Yeah. I think we were about half an hour away from someone being able to do the classic Klinsmann dive into the puddle, which is the only step up from the kind of twisting knee slide.
Now the other thing, and you speak of judgment, but the energy of the crowd, United feeding off that, but also Ralf Rangnick's substitutions after that extraordinary period at which Man United had been leading 2-0, then all of a sudden they weren't. 24 seconds between the two Leeds goals. The first somewhat fortuitous from Rodrigo, and then Dan James setting up Rafinha, who had a point to prove. Perhaps we'll talk about that against Dan James's old club. But then what happened?
Well, Rangnick changed the game, and he changed the game in a way that was reasonably unpopular at the time, but is hugely important because if the one, other than all the kind of intangible worries and doubts about Solskjaer, the one tangible issue was that he didn't seem to be able to manage the game particularly well with his substitutions. They were either formulaic or they were a bit too late, or it felt like he was leaving on players because of who they were, not how they were playing. And Rangnick took off Paul Pogba, who I thought was the best player until that point. He was kind of the only one that seemed to be able to. It was like he was playing on a dry pitch and everyone else was playing on a wet pitch for most of the game. And sent on Fred to do this kind of roaming, you know, adventurer role where he pops up on the left-hand side of the penalty area and pops up on the edge of his own box and pops up on the right wing. And he was fantastic at it. And also sent on Anthony Elanga and told him and Jadon Sancho clearly to stay wide and kind of stretch leads so that Bruno might have a little bit more space in the middle of the pitch. And I think Bruno probably came slightly noticeably more central at that point. And it worked an absolute treat. It really did. And he took off Cristiano Ronaldo, which was a statement move in that game because he hadn't really done anything other than missing the chance, which I think was slightly behind him but should have scored. But yeah, perfect substitution. It doesn't always work like that, clearly. Clearly, you know, I can't remember the last time that two Manchester United subs came on to score, but it doesn't happen very often. So when it does, you you know, you take it, and it came in a big game when Rangnick needed it most.
Mm. What's Bielsa's beef with Rafinha, out of interest? Had he been playing in the first half, might have been a slightly different half-time score.
Yeah, I don't know. I my impression before I heard anything was that he was just A, kind of tired, and B, was just coming back from a bit of a niggly injury, and maybe the conditions and the opponent weren't an ideal place for that. But as Noz said, he used Dan James as a right winger, which is what Rafinha had been doing, and there was a clear tactic to get Dan James in behind. So I suspect it was purely tactical. Rafinha is one of Leeds' best players, so I would start him every week, but Bielsa knows more than me.
Leeds feel like one of a number of teams you're just desperately waiting for the season to end. I think you'd put probably Leicester and Villa in that category as well, but it seems so sort of unfeasible and not practical to change the manager now. But it feels like the manager's had enough and the players have had enough of the manager, and that's a really dangerous position for them to be in. But it's, you know, as we kind of mentioned before, I think it was Adam Crafton on the pod a few weeks back saying it's going to take so long to deprogram these Leeds players that to switch the manager mid-season could be catastrophic. So they're in this really awkward place whereby they don't seem to be executing the system well enough. And obviously they've got significant injury problems and have had for most of the season. But it just feels like, you know, Bielsa said afterwards, didn't he? He's worried about relegation. Just feels like they're on the slide, and lo and behold, they go to Liverpool next, and then they've got Spurs, who are seemingly newly resurgent.
Well, there you go. Not the greatest of afternoons for him and Leeds supporters, particularly the ones who threw coins. 4-2 on Sunday afternoon. Adam Crafton pointing out that 20% of United's Premier League goals this season have come against Leeds, which is quite remarkable. Ooh, one other thing to mention, and Noz, you're our kind of multimedia manipulation expert. What did you make of Harry Maguire's Instagram photoshopped man's head on Leeds fan effort? Did you see that?
No.
So
it's very weird, isn't it?
Mm.
It's just a normal photo, but with a kind of someone's
head.
Face.
Do we know who it is?
Well, my first guess was that, I mean, he's from Yorkshire. Maybe right. He had a family member who's a Leeds fan. And, I mean, without jumping to too many conclusions, the bloke didn't look unlike an older Harry Maguire. I mean, it isn't his dad. I could say that because we've seen photos of his dad before, but maybe like an uncle or something.
Right.
It's a good mate.
That is a complete guess.
He tweeted, this is sort of breaking news for us, 58 minutes ago. For everyone asking, it's my good mate, a big Leeds fan. He was at the ground, but not in the pick. He's been giving us some stick all week, so I thought I'd add him. Smiling face emoji, red circle emoji.
Brilliant. Family members can be friends too, so I sort of right.
Yeah, all right. Excellent. Next up for Man United is a trip to the Wanda Metropolitano in that Madrid. Daniel, you're accompanying them there for the clash with Atletico Madrid.
Yes, it's the classic European trip of the flight back at 6:10 in the morning, so you don't go to sleep, you just go straight to the airport from the game. Malarkey, which should be interesting. Obviously, the game doesn't finish till 11 out there, so it's not too bad. But yes, I can't wait. I think it's it's clearly a really, really good time to be playing Atletico Madrid, who don't seem to keep clean sheets much anymore.
Although they did this weekend.
Yes, they did this weekend.
Against Osasuna. Similarly to Man United, they're battling for top four, but they're just outside the Champions League places. On goal difference to the resurgent Barcelona, who had a big win this weekend with a hat-trick from a certain Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. You can hear more about all that kind of thing and a big preview of Atletico's prospects from our man Alvaro Romeo in the Totally Football Show Euro edition, which will also feature Christoph Biermann discussing the Bundesliga, which was pretty remarkable this weekend, and Dortmund's chances of reversing that upset against Rangers in the Europa League last week. And all the rest of the news, of course, from around the continent. Also out this week, we've got the Totally Football League show with Matt Davis-Adams. You're on it this time, are you, Matt?
I am, yeah. Yeah, we'll be recording that later today. We'll be talking about a couple of managerial departures in the Championship. Veljko Panovic at Reading's a funny one. Lost 8 in a row, all competitions, drew midweek, and then they decided between he and the Reading board that he'd be leaving before the game at Preston at the weekend, and they were 3-0 up and ended up winning 3-2. Darren Ferguson leaving Peterborough for the latest time, but he'll be back, if not before the end of the season, then probably next season.
Oh, really? How many years has he been there?
Well, he's had three different spells. so far. Okay. So he tends to go for a bit, get them out of League One once they've been relegated, not quite be up to it in the Championship, and then go again. But yeah, kind of weird tweet, like Peterborough putting out the kind of tweet that you would do, I don't know, to tell friends that it was you who ended the relationship, not them. It said there was a phone call between the owner and the manager, and they've come to this decision. But yeah, all a bit weird there.
All right. Well, what's exciting is the man taking over at the Medeski. Step forward, the governor. Four lints.
This is so weird, and I was trying to think of a justification for it, and basically what I've got is his son Tom is on loan at Reading at the moment, and that's about as best as I can come up with as to why you would appoint somebody who hasn't managed a team in 8 years and didn't do a very good job then.
It's incredible PR work though from the club, because if you do appoint the dad of someone who's on loan at the club, and everyone's going to go, surely that's not the reason why. Don't make the point in the statement that Ince is the dad of Tom Ince, who's also already on loan at the club, because that makes it look like you just asked at training if anyone knew anyone.
Paul was there. Yeah.
Maybe he dropped him off. Yeah.
Wickham had a 5-5 draw with Cheltenham. I imagine that'll be featuring on your agenda as well in the Totally Football League show. On Tuesday, the Athletic Women's Football Podcast is out, with talk of England's draw with Euro favourite Spain on Sunday, and I gotta believe that the extraordinary case of Liverpool defender Michaela Moore will be featured. Michaela Moore, who scored a hat-trick while on international duty for New Zealand against USA. A hat-trick of own goals.
There goes Purse. Still Purse. And when it rains, it pours. It is pouring right now on Michaela Moore and the football ferns.
After the second own goal went in, I thought, I'll turn this on. It's a horrible, horrible rubbernecker. And, I mean, it was an imperfect hat-trick as well. Left foot, right foot header, which is incredibly unfortunate. But the worst thing was, I mean, it was a 50th cap for her country, so she thought it would be a joyous occasion. And she got substituted after 40 minutes, and she was distraught, and it was impossible not to feel for her. But I can't work out at that point whether surely substituting her at that point is the worst possible move. If you're going to substitute her,
how many do you want her to score?
Yeah, just do it at half time so you can just have a word with her. And I just thought that was awful.
The weird thing was the third one seemed the most avoidable, so that, you know, the second one was very accidental, kind of went off her head. I don't think she knew too much about the first one either. But the third one, you think by that point, I've conceded 2 own goals. I have to be really, really careful about how I try and clear this ball coming into the box. And she just puts it straight into her own net.
Yeah, but I think that's hashtag heads gone territory by that point. Right. I think you're just wanting the ground to swallow you up, maybe.
Well, then I guess that's why you take her
off. Yeah.
More. How do you like it? Not very much. I scored 3 own goals. Yeah.
Yeah, you set yourself up there. That's fair enough, I suppose.
Maybe they took her off to get the applause from the opposition to the opposition's fans.
I wonder if she kept the ball.
Like,
yeah. Adam Hurry tweeted, does that mean that the mantelpiece gets to put her?
Anyway, I hope she's feeling better about that, and better days ahead. Next up for us on the Totally Football Show. Ooh, the whole relegation picture with the bottom 7 separated by just 7 points.
Keep listening for Dom Fifeld versus Tom Williams in the Intertotally Cup, sponsored by Paddy Power. And we apologise for any bad language you may hear.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu. You're listening to The Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. And with Paddy Power, if something doesn't go quite to plan, you can get your money back as a free bet if one leg of your bet builder lets you down. Which is excellent news for Everton fans when they make their Lampardian transition from serious to funny to serious once again. Pre-match bet builders only. Get your stake back as a free bet. Minimum 4 plus legs. Maximum free bet is £10. Excludes enhanced match odds. Online exclusives and T's and C's apply.
All right, fans of exciting edge of your seat, down to the wire relegation battles. We'll be delighted with how the Premier League is turning out this time around, with Burnley winning, with Watford winning, and with Everton not winning. So they're now in that bottom seven, level with Newcastle. They're on 22 points. That's only 4 points above Watford in 18th. Will it be enough? Where do you want to start with this? You got that remarkable Burnley win away down in Brighton. 3 goals. You got Watford winning, scoring goals, or a goal. And you got the Everton performance away to Southampton. What do you think?
I think Burnley's a standout result, isn't it? Given that it was their second win of the season. And they were helped by a Brighton side shorn of their regular defence for various reasons. But yeah, Wout Weghorst looked amazing. And I didn't realise that he's from a wealthy family who own over 100 petrol stations in the Netherlands, and that he once beat Michael van Gerwen in a leg of darts. But there you go. Jeez,
there was a tweet, Matt, for that. There was a tweet that went viral on Sunday night that was effectively saying, I'm hearing that men just like to lie in bed at night reading Wikipedia pages, and Matt has just completely skewered himself.
Wow. This is from the Bundesliga.com, so you know, at least I feel like it's legit. But yeah, quite the claim to fame, and a bit of positive, you know, positive PR for Wout, who has needed it over the last year or so.
Are you confident about Wout? Because I was going with Vogt.
No, I'm not confident about it.
All right.
Also,
Vogt's what I've heard, and also you can make jokes about crosses in boxes and stuff.
Oh, very good. And that's big for you, James, isn't it?
Because it is
big. I know how bad you'll be feeling about wooden barns having been broken up, and that was your whole Burnley thing, wasn't it?
So he enjoyed his goal. He looked really moved about getting that. That's Brighton against Burnley. What do we make of Aston Villa 0, Watford 1? Stat, first of all, Watford's last 6 Premier League away wins have all come under different managers. I repeat, their last 6 away wins in the Premier League have each come under different managers. I almost want to say it a third time because it's just such an extraordinary state of affairs. Does the listener want to name them? Can you do it? The last 6 Watford managers?
Hodgson, Gracia, Flores. Someone help me out.
I was going to say
Hayden Mullins.
No, not
Munoz. Did he get one this
season? Yeah,
Munoz,
Cisco Munoz. There's two legends, both
Nigel Pearson.
Yes, and
Zola.
No,
he's too early.
Well, Claudio Ranieri. I don't think we've mentioned him yet.
Sorry.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway, so Roy Hodgson, meanwhile, getting his first win as Hornets manager and the first goal they scored under his charge. And Ismail Assar making his first start since they beat Man United in November. Would it be simplistic to suggest a connection between those two things?
Absolutely. Bang on. He'd created 4 chances. Emmanuel Dennis is finally dangerous when Ismail Assar's on the pitch. You know, that in terms of XG, he had, I think, 0.5 XG on at the weekend, which is more than in his previous 5 or 6 games combined. It's just those two as an attack, the creator and the finisher. And if they're not both on the pitch at the same time, then they really struggle. But if Hodgson can keep them both fit and you know, tighten up the defence, which is his thang, then they've still got a chance because everyone's got a chance, I think.
I liked him saying we're getting divorced from the teams above us, which felt like a very Roy kind of quote. But he's got the opportunity, hasn't he, on Wednesday. They're playing Crystal Palace. I just wonder if he's going to have a word with Harry the Hornet and spin this whole thing on its head and, you know, get in Zaha's head before the game. And then maybe that'll help them get another win.
Right. What an extraordinary match that is coming up midweek. Roy against his former side. As for Steven Gerrard and Aston Villa, that's now 1 win in the last 8 in all competitions. They have a sufficient buffer between them and the teams in trouble, but that's a really worrying run of form.
Yeah, I think this was one of the stories of the weekend because how badly they played against Newcastle last weekend needed a reaction. And if anything, they played worse. They seem to be putting everything through Philippe Coutinho, which is understandable in that he's a very good player, but they were already creating chances before. And he's only on loan, so kind of putting all your eggs in that basket seems a very odd thing to do, and it's not a popular thing to do at Villa Park because they're still not defending very well. They're still not really taking their chances. And the reality is, if you spend as heavily as Villa have, including in January, and the team looks worse, that's not a good look for a manager. You know, you have to improve and coach the players you inherited as well as just signing players. He's only been there a while and he's at least got until the summer, but it's a pretty bad moment for Gerrard, I think.
And he's come in midway through the season with all the complications that involves to a struggling side. As I say, 9 points off the relegation zone, so he'll be all right. His erstwhile England midfield teammate, Frank Lampard, on the other hand, might actually be in some trouble. A 2-0 defeat for Everton away at Saints. They've got Man City next, have Everton, at Goodison on Saturday. They have the worst away record in the Premier League. They will be at home next time around. Their haul of 22 points from their first 23 games is their worst tally since 1950-51 at this stage of a top-flight campaign. I mean, love for Saints, who continue to be very formidable under Ralf Hasenhüttl, but are Everton going to be... Is it going to have a dramatic ending to this season for them, do you think?
That away record's the key thing that you mentioned, James. They've still got to go to Spurs, West Ham, Liverpool and Arsenal.
Wow.
Yeah,
so it's going to be tight.
They are really bad, and they've picked up this annoying habit under Lampard of kind of shooting from anywhere. I was having a look at their... having watched the highlights, it sort of jumped out to me. So I had a little look at it. And like their average shot on Saturday was 22 yards from goal. Like, that isn't a viable way of scoring goals. You know, you can have 20 shots, but if they're all from miles out and they don't really test a goalkeeper, there's not a lot of point to it.
Are you suggesting that's Lampard's influence?
I'm suggesting it's something he has to solve. They've not been brilliant at it all season, although they have got worse at it under him. I think it reflects a desperation probably to impress and to kind of haul themselves back into the game. But those are the times where you have to be kind of calm and composed rather than shooting from anywhere.
All right. Saints had 11 shots on target to Everton's nil on target.
They needed Calvert-Lewin to hit the ground running, didn't they, on his return from injury, and he hasn't. He hasn't scored from open play. Well, he's only done so once all season, and that was on the opening day. Obviously, he's missed most of it. But, that was kind of the obvious solution to that shooting and not scoring problem, and it's not happened for him yet.
Man City coming up on Saturday. For now, Everton are level with Newcastle, but a very different momentum to the Magpies right now. They are fresh from a 1-1 draw away at West Ham in the early game Saturday, just to finish off the Premier League weekend. Daniel, you went to this one and were inspired to write about Joe Ellington, which is nice, but actually, surely the big story was Chris Wood really meowing at Kurt Zouma.
I only heard about that after the game, and I mean, I hope it's true. Newcastle fans bought a series of fairly garish orange inflatable cats and sang a Zouma-related chant to the tune of DJ Otzi's Hey Baby, which I thought we'd left behind as a cultural reference by now. But hey, Zouma, we want to know why you kicked a cat. So it's pretty 1+1=2 stuff, chant-wise. But Joe Linton was phenomenal. I love the fact that, I said in the piece, I can't remember a time when a player, you know, 25, it's not like his legs have gone, has had his role changed so significantly mid-season and been really successful at it. He basically plays as a defensive midfielder when Newcastle don't have the ball and then charges up the pitch as soon as Newcastle have the ball to try and join the attack. He was absolutely brilliant, and he is the kind of poster boy of this surprising Eddie Howe grit and guts and determination kind of mentality monster Newcastle, who are by no means safe because teams below them also won this weekend. But they're now, I think, 4 games, 10 points from 12. So they're on the right track.
Remarkable. Okay. I rashly said that wraps it up for the Premier League, but there's still 3 games we haven't even mentioned. Let's crack through these because we've got Inter totally on the way. Let's see. There was Chelsea winning at Crystal Palace, Leicester losing at Wolves, and Arsenal beating Brentford 2-1. Matt, first of all, Crystal Palace, Chelsea, worst game you saw all season.
Yeah, I say that, and then I remembered the Club World Cup final.
That was bad.
This was worse. I mean, Palace didn't even manage to have a shot on target in the entire game. Although they had really good chances at the start and end of the first half with Elise and Zaha. But yeah, Chelsea just can't get any momentum. Obviously, we're going to talk about Lukaku only having seven touches of the ball, which is the main takeaway.
Seven touches of the ball.
Yeah, it's really...
And one of those was the kickoff to start the match.
One was the kickoff, yeah, yeah.
I'm almost officially disbanding the fan club, which is a shame.
I think he's more culpable than Thomas Tuchel or his teammates for what's been happening with him this season, I've got to say.
Right.
I think Adrian mentioned it on Thursday's pod, didn't he, about how good he was in that game at the Emirates at the start of the season. I was there for that as well, and it was a remarkable sort of tour de force from Lukaku, and he's just been basically ineffective ever since then. Those goals of the Club World Cup kind of papered over the cracks, but yeah, it's a problem because he costs so much money, he's on so much money, he's of an age where he's got little resale value that Chelsea still have to try and find a way to make this work, and you know, it doesn't look like there's a particular desire to do that from Thomas Tuchel at the moment.
He sets a record for the fewest touches in a single Premier League game. This is for players who have stayed on the field for the full 90 minutes. A record since the data became available in 2003-2004. No one's ever had that few touches. Right, okay. There you go. We'll move on from Crystal Palace, Chelsea. Chelsea at least picking up the 3 points there. Meanwhile, Wolves keep on wolving. They recorded a 2-1 win over Leicester, Daniel.
Yeah, I just wanted to briefly mention Jose Sarr, who I think has probably been the best goalkeeper in the Premier League this season. When Wolves sold Rui Patricio, some concern about whether they were losing the best goalkeeper they've had in a long time. And it now looks like they've upgraded because Sarr is, you know, he's leading the Premier League in things like save percentage. His distribution is miles better than Patricio's was. And yeah, the Uncle George model looks to have found a good one there.
Magnificent. And Arsenal, 2-1 winners over Brentford. Brentford, who are just about all right. They're 6 points above the bottom three. But Watford, who are in 18th, have two games in hand on them. Crikey. Oh, they're only 7 points above Burnley, who have four games in hand on them. Actually, should we be worried for Thomas Frank's bees?
All about their next three, Brentford, Newcastle, Norwich and Burnley. Ooh. So ask me again after those, basically.
All right.
It might be able to, you know, if they can avoid defeat and get 3 points from those three games and just stop those other teams making up ground on them, that might be as significant as winning one and losing the other two. Their running's not too bad, but my word, they're in no form at all. They just don't. I know they got a late consolation goal here, but without Tony either scoring or not being fit, you just wonder where their goals are coming from for the rest of the
season. Indeed. Well, that's it then for the weekend's games. There's more, as we mentioned, coming up midweek. But next up, raw drama with Intertotally Match 2.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
One regular day of Intertotally, that's all I ask for, will never happen. Thursday, remarkable scenes as Duncan Alexander won the opening game of this season's Intertotally Cup, 4-0 over Alvaro Romeo. Alvaro is Spanish, he passed a lot. Now, two more hopefuls enter the arena. Only with correct answers can they hope to survive. Let's meet our first contestant.
First, he's the Chelsea reporting and Crystal Palace supporting writer for The Athletic. Will he get more answers than Lukaku had touches against the Eagles this weekend? It's Dominic Fifield.
Dom, welcome back.
Thanks for having me on. How are you doing?
Oh, good. Yeah, enjoyed your entrance music there.
I thought you might.
Yeah, that's the beloved everybody with Hello. After they went electric, a la Dylan. Excellent. Are you excited to be back in the Intertotally?
Yeah, I imagine it'll be a fleeting visit, but I'm very much looking forward to it, yeah.
I wouldn't be so sure about that, Dom.
All right. Oh, there's his opponent. Let's meet him.
And his opponent. He's the author of Do You Speak Football, a book that's been described as definitive, amusing and informative. But yes, the movie rights are still available. From the Principality of Wales, it's Tom Williams.
All right, a feisty Tom Williams joining us. Tom, are you in Paris this morning?
I am indeed.
All right. Bonjour.
Bonjour.
Tom, you've had some tough draws in the past, but I recall that you were delighted when you drew Dom out of the hat and made all sorts of...
That is absolute slander. That is absolute slander. I said nothing of the sort. No, it's true. I have had two tough draws previously, two first round exits. So if I can get this into totally monkey off my back, I will be very happy.
Okay. Well, both Tom and Dom are looking to progress to the next round for the very first time. As you will recall, the winner of today's game will also receive £10 for the charity of their choice, which Paddy Power will place on a bet of your choice, with the proceeds of that also going to that charity. Tom, what's your charity going to be?
My charity is Refugee Action.
Excellent. Okay. And what is your wager?
My wager is Cristiano Ronaldo to score against Atletico Madrid.
Ah, okay.
Because he always scores against Atletico Madrid. Yeah, that was the very small amount of theory that went into that one.
I think it's an excellent idea. Let's hear now from Dom. Dom, what's your charity?
Charity is a children's trust.
Good, good. And your wager?
Well, obviously it's Crystal Palace to win the FA Cup.
Boom. All right. Dom, you're up first.
Oh, poor really? Kids. Oh, God.
They need shoes.
You're up first, so let's get this intertotally match underway. Question one, Dom. Which is the missing name in this list of permanent Everton managers? Roberto Martinez, Ronald Koeman, Sam Allardyce, missing name, Carlo Ancelotti. Who was between...
Marco Silva.
Yes, 1 point for Dom. Question two, signed by a Spanish club in 2019, who is the most expensive Dutch player ever? Two and a half years ago, moving to La Liga for a record fee for a Dutch player.
It's the Barca midfield. Oh, God, this is annoying.
I'll have to hurry you there, Dom.
Frankie de Jong.
Oh! He pulls that one out of the bag. That's 2 points for Dom Fifield. Question three. Which player won the Premier League with Leicester City in 2015-16 while on loan from another Premier League club? Premier League winner with Leicester. His parent club was another.
Yeah. Oh, God. I know this as well. Bloody hell.
Running out of time. Clock is ticking. Have to
That's
press
annoying.
You.
Yeah, go on. I can't remember that one.
It's Nathan Dyer on loan from Swansea.
Yeah.
All right. Question four. The Geoffrey Watling stand is at which Premier League ground? Geoffrey
Norwich Watling City
is correct. 3 out of 4. And here comes question five. Which club did Steve McLaren first manage after being sacked by England?
FC Twente
is correct. And I had to stop myself giving that one away with my pronunciation of Steve McLaren. So with a remarkable 4 out of 5, Dom, how'd you feel?
Well, it's better than last year. I'm a bit annoyed with myself on Nathan Dyer because I knew that, and Stu Jones won't forgive me on that one, but I'll take that.
All right, 4 out of 5. That lays quite a marker down for you, Tom Williams. Are you ready?
No, but you know, let's have a go nonetheless.
All right then, here's question one for you, Tom. Which is the missing name in this list of permanent Aston Villa managers? Tim Sherwood, Remy Gard, missing name, Steve Bruce, Dean Smith. Who came between Remy Gard and Steve Bruce? It's a tough one, this. Any of our panel know? Without giving it away, obviously. Oh, right.
Do you get bonus marks?
No, Dom, disappointingly, but you feel confident you know this one, do you? I must admit, this was a bit of a shock to me.
Me too. Just looked it up.
Tom?
It's going to be a shock to me as well, because I can't think what the answer is.
Oh, right. Dom, are you? I think time's probably up. Yeah. Dom, do you want to throw that one?
I was going to say Paul Lambert, but I probably wasn't.
No, it's not Paul Lambert. Daniel?
It's Bobby Di Matteo,
I think. It is Bobby Di Matteo.
Oh, my word.
Completely forgotten about that.
That's not good for the Chelsea podcast, is it?
Good knowledge, by the way, from Daniel, who, of course, has a first-round encounter with Michael Cox.
Yeah, that's not worrying.
On the way. Question two, anyway, Tom. Signed by an English club in 2020, who is the most expensive German player ever? Came to the Premier League
is
in 2020.
Timo Werner.
It's Can not, Tom. It's not. Havertz. It's the other one. It's Kai Havertz. Yeah.
Oh,
all right. No, all right. We'll run through the rest of your questions, but that does mean that Dom Fifield is in the quarter.
Nothing better than playing for fun, Tom. There's nothing better than playing for fun.
I'll get all of these right now. You watch.
All right. Question three. In Leicester's 2015-16 season, only one of their players had previously won a Premier League title winner's medal. Who was it?
I should get this right.
Which one of Leicester's title-winning players from 15-16 had previously won the Premier League title?
I'll tell you. Robert Huth?
It is! Yes! Great, yeah. He's on the board.
He's on the board.
Question four. The Jack Harris stand is at which Premier League ground?
Jack Harris.
Anyone know this one?
I'd guess at Turf Moor, but...
It's not Turf Moor. Tom?
I've ruled one out for you, mate.
Thanks, mate. anyone want to rule any more out while we're on the subject? I will guess at Brighton.
No, it's the Molyneux. It's at Molyneux, sorry.
Oh, dear.
And question five then, Tom. Which club did Glenn Hoddle first manage after being sacked by England?
It was one of two. I must say Wolves.
Nope. Anybody want to answer
Spurs.
That one? Nope.
Wasn't Southampton?
Yes! One yes, it was Southampton.
One of two. turns out it was neither of two.
Excellent. So a final score in that match of 4-1. And Dom Fifield matching Duncan Alexander's fine record of 4 correct answers out of 5 in his clash with Alvaro the other day. Excellent work.
I'd just like to thank my family for sticking by me at difficult times. And
you should be thanking me, Dom, really.
I am actually.
I've got you match fit for this with our weekly Straight Outta Cobham quiz. So I'll take the assist on this one, yeah.
All right. Well, there you go, Dom. You're clearly emotional about this win, so we'll leave you to collect your thoughts and let it all sink in. And we'll be seeing you in the next round against, if memory serves, either Charlie Eccleshare or James Horncastle. Who do you want?
Can I have Tom again, please?
Kick a man while he's down, why don't you?
I think I'm going to get my own back after the slur from the pre-match.
But there was no slur. There's a complete invention from James to try and gee us up pre-quiz.
I love you, Tom. Sorry, mate.
Congratulations, Dom Fifield. You're through to the next round of the Intertotally Cup. And if you think that Dom's onto a winner with his bet that Crystal Palace will win the FA Cup this year, it's priced at 22-1 at paddypower.com or on the Paddy Power app. Odds are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only, and please gamble responsibly.
The Intertotally returns with match 3 of this exciting campaign on Thursday. A show which will also feature in and around that some reaction to the Champions League and the midweek Premier League. And, of course, a big look forward to what to look out for on the weekend. For now, that pretty much wraps it up for today's show. Anything else you feel needs mentioning, Matt, Daniel, Noz?
The Intertotally has been good for me so far, by the way, because I've been kind of awarded the dunce's cap unfairly for the last couple of years. But Alvaro and Tom have really taken some of the heat off me in my first round tie, I think. So pleased with that.
Excellent. Wait, who are you up against? Who have you drawn, Matt?
Jules. So, yeah, I feel like it's very much about the questions. If there's a heavy European slant, it could be a whitewash. Otherwise, you know, if it's about obscure records released by footballers in the 70s. That was what helped get me past Rory Smith last year. So fingers crossed on that one.
Right, yeah. Okay. And Daniel, as we mentioned, has Michael Cox. Nozick, you're not taking part, is that right?
No, no.
Did we simply not invite you, or did you decline?
No. I mean, I'm absolutely rubbish at this kind of thing, so yeah, probably for
right.
the best.
Fair enough, fair enough.
Doesn't let us stop Tom Williams.
Nods, you're so very good at the things that you do. So many thanks for bringing some of those to today's show. Many thanks as well to Daniel and Matt Davis-Adams. Likewise for you, gentlemen. And thank you, listener, for being with us, and Charlie for putting it all together. We return Tuesday with the Euro Show and Thursday with Stuff. We'll speak to you then. Bye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and discover bonus content by following the Athletic UK Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts. Find out the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally. The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.